Greetings and welcome back. I am Dan Stultz, along here with Brian Lewis to finish our three-part series on the Exam Jumpstart 7534 prerequisites for architecting Microsoft Azure solutions. Brian, you and I are doing an event series coming up, and we're making this video series a prerequisite for that really awesome class. So thank you very much for joining me today. Maybe you can start us off with just a quick intro into what we're going to talk about in this final part of the prerequisites.
Great. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully, you've all signed up for the newsletter for event information. As far as what we're going to go through in this part three of the series is we're going to look at the Azure portal, and we're going to look at the new portal, the current production portal. And we're just going to look at how we use it, just like we looked at with the old portal of how we create a VM, how we remote into it, how we manage the services there, and look at the features that it offers. So we'll go through that in the new portal.
Great. Now, in the first episode, we kind of did some death by PowerPoint and talked about high-level Azure. In part two, we went into the classic portal and kind of showed how to create a virtual machine looking around the portal. And now I understand, yeah, we're going to go into the new portal and do that. But before we do that, I want everybody that has not already signed up for the newsletter to go to pause this recording, go to itproguru.com/join so that you don't miss out on the opportunity for either the online event that we've got coming up in a couple of months or next several months from now. Brian and I and the rest of our team are going to be crisscrossing the country to do these live events where we're going to do an all-day crash course where we're going to use the Microsoft Press book, Architecting Microsoft Azure Solutions Exam Reference 7534 as the curriculum for that one-day class. And my understanding now is there's a very, very high probability that all attendees and all of those classes, including the online class, will very likely get their very own copy of the book, which, again, we're using as the curriculum. So yet another incentive. After we go through this short set of videos here, Brian, maybe we can close things out with a couple of exam tips. So with that, why don't you go ahead and take it away and show us the new portal.
Great. Thanks. Okay, so here we are at the new portal, or the current production portal. As we showed before, we have an overview of the service health of all of Azure, and then we have different customizable boxes on the screen. Let's start with just looking over at the left column and what we can go into on the left side. Our resource groups, and as we talked about, Dan mentioned version 2 is resource groups as opposed to the services. In resource groups, it's basically got all of my groups listed of different things I've created and what the group is. The group is a top handle for it. And so if I were to delete a group, it deletes all of the things within that group, whether it's the network, whether it's a server, whether it's other services, whether it's storage, everything within that group will be deleted. As a matter of fact, we should go down and look into one of these groups. I clicked on the Monster Camp group, it brings up all resources within there. Right now I've deleted everything but the SSD storage from that. If I go into all resources, we'll see everything that I have built within the entire system, not just the resource groups at the top level, but all the sub-level pieces within there. If we go further on down, we've got things like our SQL databases, or our virtual machines. We created a virtual machine last time, and in Virtual Machine Classic, that machine will list. So we created a BJL temp machine, but it's a classic because we created it in the old portal. It's an old services style machine. What we're going to do now is we're going to create a virtual machine in the new style, the resource virtual machine, and I do have one there that's turned off right now in Ubuntu box, but we'll create another one. And then we have the cloud services, subscription information, that kind of thing. So we'll start up here and we'll hit the new at the top. When I hit new, I get a whole lot of things I can go create, from compute these are all the server type things that we can create. So here's the servers, much like we saw before. If we go into web and mobile, this is where I can do websites and web apps, or other types of services. If I want to create a database first, right, this is where I go, is in data storage, and I create basically a storage account. That's where I'll store my VM. So you may want to go create your storage account first, and then your network as well, which will be down under networking. Under data and analytics, I can create my Hadoop clusters and different types of data and analysis pieces. Under IoT or Internet of Things, I can do things such as an IoT hub, which helps connect up my IoT little devices, submitting all kinds of data up to Azure for analysis later. Networking. Here I go create my virtual network. I can also create the other types of network pieces, like a traffic manager profile, to then shunt traffic from a DNS name to different services. So some of the same things we've seen before, but a different way to create them. So if we switch over back to the dashboard, this is a customizable spot. And so I have things listed here that I care about when I come in. For one, I can choose my server here, and I can go in and see information about it. If I go back, another thing I can do there is I can right-click on it, and I can customize it. I can unpin it from the dashboard or make it smaller or bigger, depending on what is, you know, how many I want to fit on the screen or what's interesting to me about that. So there I've just created that machine and made it smaller. There I've deleted it. If I want to go back and put that back, I can do that as well. So customizing is a nice piece of the dashboard.
Kind of reminds me of my Windows phone with the tiles and changing the tile size and stuff. Very cool.
It is a lot like that Windows phone interface. And the other thing, you know, is if I want to go into, let's say, that machine we just created, we created that BGL temp before. From here, I can put that, if I right-click, I can pin that to dashboard as well. As we mentioned before, this is all HTML5. There's no plugins or anything like that, but I still do get right-click ability. I right-clicked in the browser, and I can pin it to the dashboard. I can connect to it. I can restart it, stop it, capture it, without a plugin. So that's one of the benefits of HTML5, is it's not our traditional browser where the right click doesn't do a whole lot for you.
Love HTML5 for sure. Now, okay, Brian, so just to highlight, you have virtual machines classic and you have virtual machines. So is there a need to go to the other portal from here? I mean, from a test standpoint, I know we're going to need to be able to do both, and a lot of stuff's got to be done in classic, but can I manage Classic from here? It looks like I can.
You certainly can manage your Classic VMs from the new portal. There's a few items that might still be there you might come across. That last I looked, there were some reasons to go back for some of the backup. If I'm doing Azure backup, there were things that I had to do in the old portal still that they hadn't created new plugins for the new portal. But those will be going away, and they may already be gone today. As I mentioned before, Azure revs every 3 weeks or so. There's new stuff and new functionality in the portal. So it continually gets new services, as well as the plugins that were in the old portal keep getting moved over into the new portal. So
yeah,
it's
hard to keep up with all the changes. They happen so fast. But yeah. You know, I want to also highlight too, though, that even though the old portal is going away and we're going to continue with, for all the reasons that we talk about as we go through the class and as we go through the portals, all the really awesome features that are in the new portal, for purposes of the test, we still have to understand that the classic portal and what the differences are.
Yep, that's a very good point. Okay, so let's go through the how we go create a machine. And so I'm going to click New, and here I'm going to choose Compute. And then I get to look at my servers. Last time I created a server 2012 R2 box, so I'll do the same this time as well. Now, when I go to create it, I actually have a choice. I can create a classic or a resource managed server. If I create classic, that's exactly what we created last time, was basically a services classic V1 Azure IaaS VM. So this time I'm going to change that to resource managed. Just to create a version 2.1. But I can do both from this portal. So it is a little bit of a different interface. We have these blades that slide out, right? So in this Metro type interface, blades are the way we build things. And so it's not a wizard screen that popped up, but it's a blade that is a wizard. So here I'm going to do a BJL test. Let's do test two. I'll set my username and my password. Now you notice these things are green, which means that they're okay. On the password, you might have noticed it was red to begin with, and then it changed to green after it passed some difficulty tests, because we don't want you using the word password or 12345. And then I get to place it in existing or create a brand new resource group. I'm going to create a new one, BJL test two.
Yeah, and this Brian, is going to be a- sorry, while you're here, one of the things that's really important to understand is what you're actually doing on this screen is you're filling out variables. Variables that are defined in the template of that new virtual machine that you're creating, right? So you're actually creating it based on a template. The template that you've chosen is the Windows Server 2012 R2 data center, and these are the variables of that template that you're defining.
Lucky you stopped me, because I actually spelled my name wrong. I would have never been able to log into that machine. Yes, that's exactly what we're doing here. And then we select our location, and just as before, we have the different locations in the world. We can go create our machine. We'll go with Central US. Then I hit OK here, and it takes me down to step two. In step two, I choose my size, but I get a little bit different view of the sizes. Now, it started with just these three sizes here, but let's hit View All. And what it does is it gives me an estimate based upon my usage of what that would cost a month, which is hugely beneficial. Azure, you pay for every little bit. And so it's a very inexpensive cost for that server, but this is the biggest cost of that server. You do pay for your storage space. It, last I looked, was 9.5 cents per gigabyte for a certain type of storage. And the storage, you're going to have to understand, and we'll go through in the class, the different possibilities. But here I'm going to go choose an A0, I think, will be the machine I choose, just because it's $13.39 a month, and that fits my budget. So I'll choose an A0. That's a shared core, one data disk, and 750 gig of RAM.
Well, you don't have a very good budget, do you, Brian?
You and I are on the same team. You don't have a good budget either.
I know.
From a storage perspective, I have standard disks, which are the traditional spinning disks, or SSD drives. If I need higher IOPS or I just want to spend more money, I can choose SSDs. I'm going to stick with standard storage. And if I can choose a new storage account, or I can use a pre-existing storage account.
Let's also share, though, Brian, that SSD or premium storage is not going to be available on all machines, right? Is that still true?
To keep expanding, so the way it was, it wasn't the machines, it was the data centers that you basically in certain areas, certain regions, they hadn't had SSDs in. Okay. I know that keeps expanding, but I don't think that it's every region has SSDs yet.
But that is
a good point, because I know people will look in the portal and they'll be like, well, why can't I create one with an SSD drive? And it's because the space itself didn't support it.
Yeah, and as we go through the class, there'll be a lot of these other things that may not necessarily be on the test. But remember, we're teaching to the test, but we're also teach people how to architect solutions in Azure. So it's also going to be best practices and things that you're going to stumble on whenever you actually are starting to architect solutions on Azure.
So what I did is I just actually changed the storage account to BJL test. I'm creating new storage accounts and new everything for this. I'm going to create a new network and everything because I'm going to create it all under that resource group. And then I can go delete that resource group to clean it all up. And I don't want it to delete my network or any of the other things as it cleans up that space. So I'll say OK on this. And then it gives the summary. I say OK. And then the similar process, within 5 minutes, I'll have a new server deployed. And as you pointed out, we just answered all the variables in that JSON template that it now is going and provisioning. And we did it with a graphical environment. We could have just easily done this as a script and said, create a server, and here's the JSON template, and filled those things out, or even had it pull us and ask us to fill those things from the script. So if you're going to create a bunch of servers, it's a lot easier to do it from a script than it is from a web interface. So we see this machine is creating. Let's go back into the SSD box that we went into before, and we'll look at the information within there. I choose the machine, and we have the same type of information of, you know, usage. Here we're seeing CPU usage. At the top, we have things like settings, connect, restart or start if it's turned off. Here we have stop, capture. We talked about Dan having to reset his password before. That would be this tab here, reset remote access. And this will, you can basically go reset your password if you forgot it or were locked out somehow. And then I can delete as well. If I go into the settings, this is where I have all my list of different settings. We talked about the firewall before. And I would go and change my firewall in this section as well, my endpoint. So the endpoints is a lot easier to find here than it was previously. And here's our endpoints. We have port 80, 443, 389, and the PowerShell remote ports open to this server right now. Other than that, this server can go out with any port, but coming into it, you have to have one of these ports to come in. Here's my IP. So I have the external IP, or what's called the VIP for the test, the virtual IP, and then the private IP, or called the DIP, the dynamic IP address for the test. If I want to create this address static, I would just actually here change it to static, and mine is static, but I can change that. Actually, I guess mine was dynamic. If I change it to static and hit save, now my IP address will be static. And what that means is not every time I turn off my machine or reboot my machine or apply patches does it get a new DHCP address, right? But when I deprovision it and remove it, when I put it back into that network, it would get a new address unless we've done this static. It's not really static. It's a DHCP reservation. And these are things we'll have to know for the test. Anything else to add in this area, Dan?
No, I think you're rolling. Keep it going.
Okay, well that's what I had to show for the settings area and for the aspect of the new portal. Those are the exact same things we looked at in the previous portal, and shortly we'll have this new server up and running and be able to remote control it and do whatever we want to.
Okay, so if you want to just click on all resources or maybe browse to. To go use the find function, because there's lots of things that you can do. Yeah, if you go ahead and do browse, and then you'll notice that you can actually search for, like if you searched Ubuntu or searched for something else, then you could very easily get to those other resources, right? So as you get more and more services. As there's more and more services available, those are being made available to you via the search mechanism. Now, one of the things that I've noticed as we start migrating workloads to the cloud or building new workloads in the cloud is we end up with a lot of services out there, and this screen could get pretty busy and pretty unwieldy if that's all you had to rely on to go find stuff. So maybe we should take a look at the all resources and how to filter or to go find some of our services that we have running. So like maybe if we search for Ubuntu or something, certainly you can scroll the list, but actually being able to filter is a pretty cool feature.
Yeah, and as you saw, that was a huge list of things. And if we just put in Ubuntu here, you see all my Ubuntu machines and services and disk storage and whatever I've built with that. So here we have network. We have the rules for the firewall. We have the server itself that I've built.
And just like anywhere else, if you drill down into that, it's going to take you to that resource. So right. You're not just relying on the dashboard. You have easy access to it and lots of different ways to access and to manage your cloud and cloud resources.
Yeah, when we first switched to the new portal, I was so much used to the old portal, I had a hard time finding my things to go clean them up. And it was just a matter of getting used to the new portal before I realized I like it a lot better. I can find all my things. Not only is it a prettier portal, but it is easier to find your items. And you know, if you want to clean everything out and delete them so you don't overspend your account or whatever you're looking to do, it's pretty easy to do with this tool here, the All Resources.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate the demonstration of both the Classic Portal and the Resource Manager Portal. Let me switch back and switch gears a little bit and just talk about a couple of tips and tricks, and then we'll call this a wrap. Well, thank you so much, Brian. I really, really appreciate you, all your knowledge and lessons. And I want to remind everybody, this is we've not even really scratched the surface of what's in the exam. This is kind of the foundation to understand even what this stuff is, what we're going to be talking about as we prepare for the exam. So the big challenge is actually ahead of our customers. So thank you for joining us today. I did promise in the beginning that we would do some tips. So, but before I get to that, just one last reminder that to join itprogroover.com/join to make sure that you don't miss out on the opportunity to attend these awesome events that are coming up. So, some tips. We have a bunch more of these at the event, but I want to go over very lightly just a couple of things. Brian, feel free to share others or to elaborate if you like. First and foremost is the value of certification. You know, certification, some companies actually use that as a measuring stick to even look at a resume. Right? I know I've done it for years where, you know, the certification doesn't tell me that you're great, but it tells me that you have the energy, you have the stamina, you have the desire to continue to learn, and you're capable of learning. It also tells me you have a base knowledge of the things that I'm going to have you doing. And the reality is those people that don't have that certification are automatically in the hole versus those people that do. So, you know, it can have a big impact on your self-esteem, on your career, on your income, on your stature in the community, the technology community, your business community, whatever communities you belong to. So I would ask everybody to, you know, make the decision to get started. If you already have some certifications, get this one behind you, get this one under your belt, because the cloud certification, and in particular the architecture certification for the cloud, is really, really, really big. The next one, I think, is just, you know, recognizing accomplishments, because as you go through a certification process, it can be a long and grueling process. And, you know, the information is sometimes a little dry, and it's really hard to keep it exciting when it's when sometimes a little dry. So you got to recognize accomplishments. You finish a chapter, you finish a lab, you watch a video, you read a white paper, all the things that you have to do, those are all accomplishments. So I want to encourage everybody to recognize those accomplishments. Next is getting the family on board. You know, this might sound funny, and it might even sound stupid to some people, but I'll tell you, before, I have a son, he's 11 years old, and there's been lots of certifications that I prepared for, and before I got my son involved, it was hard because he'd be coming down here, "Dad, it's 6 o'clock at night, you should be upstairs playing," right? It was really, really hard to be committed to learning and getting that certification when you have the family drawing you away. So one of the things that I did, and I actually did this prior to the 534 exam, and it worked like a charm. So I made a goal, and I made it my son's goal as well. So I promised him after I got my certification that we would go on a trip to Dave & Buster's and spend the evening there getting food and playing games and stuff. And I also said after, you know, I have to read through the materials, because in my case, it wasn't a chapter because the book wasn't out yet, because I was one of the authors on the book. But after going through the materials and learning one objective in the material, then I would take him out for ice cream. That little tiny thing, and it totally changed his view of what I was doing. Now, it wasn't that I am working and I don't care about him. Now, it's I've got this goal, this mutual goal that I'm helping us achieve together, and it made it so much easier to really progress and make that goal a reality. One of the things that you know, people tend to do is they make excuses. The bottom line when it comes to certification is the results are forever. You know, once you get the certification, that doesn't get taken away from you. Yeah, eventually it will kind of expire because the technology is old, sure. But the reality is you did it. You accomplished something pretty amazing. And that's something that's going to be on your resume. And it's going to always be on your resume. It's always something you can be proud of. So just go out and do it. And last one for our video series today, and there's going to be, again, lots more whenever we get into the actual presentation, but the last one for our prerequisites video today is understanding the value of time. Whenever I was a consultant, I always had a value that I put on my time. And as an independent consultant, the value that I put on my time was the amount that I was making if I was not working. So long story short, at one point, the value that I had on my time was $250, $300 an hour. So the way that I looked at it is if I wasn't working, it was whatever I was doing was costing me that amount of money, right? Because I'm not generating that amount of money as an independent consultant. So I worked a lot. I worked my butt off because I had that mentality. But it was a good lesson for me to learn. It was a good way to live my life because it forced me into that mode of not being lazy. So I would encourage everybody to put a value on your time. Maybe it's $25 an hour, maybe it's $10 an hour, but don't make it $0 an hour because that's no value. If your time is worthless, then why do anything? Put a value on your time. Think of it maybe as what your hourly pay is, right? Or what it's worth to you to not be with your family, right? You know, if you pay me $50 and I'll give you an hour away from my family. Right? Put that value on your time, whatever that value is. And then, you know, whenever you're sitting in front of the television or when you're doing things that don't matter, that don't progress your career and don't lead towards certification, recognize that it's costing you. You know, you want to spend 4 hours in front of the tube to watch reruns? That just costs you $200 or $100 or whatever it is. And it lessens, it motivates you to get off the couch and do what's needed to do. So there's a few of my tips to lead us into this certification track, to just do it and advance your career, advance your self-esteem, advance your income by doing what's needed and do the rest of what's needed to get this certification, and that is attend one of our upcoming events and get out and take the test.